Morning, household of God. How are we this morning? Good, good. Happy birthday, Jan. What a great gift that we are sons and daughters of the Most High King, hey? How incredible is that? So 2 weeks ago, for those who've been part of this process, a series, mini-series on perspective, established a foundation that our job is not to come up with vision and then ask God to come and bless it, but rather our job as Christians is to God is busy with, come alongside him and serve him in his work. And so this requires for all of us spiritual discernment. It requires a seeking of God. It requires a drawing near to God. It requires us disconnecting from the world and being with him. And then from that foundation as a church, we've established two perspectives. The first one is that God is raising up pristine churches. God is raising up churches that are pure, that are clear, they are uncluttered, that there's a beauty in the simplicity. We're not performance-driven, but not empty performance-driven, but pure dependence on God by the Holy Spirit. And that's what we're aiming to be as a community. The second perspective is that God gives life through these pristine churches, that God, that river, that life-giving river that flows from the sanctuary works itself through us. First ankle deep and then knee deep, then waist deep and then swimming depth, where the Dead Sea full of salt becomes fresh, where trees begin to bear fruit month after month, where fishermen get to cast their nets along the shores, where our leaves begin to bring healing to other people, where the river goes through each one of us, there is life. And that's what we're asking God to, and seeing that God is busy with us as a community, and that's what we're seeing him doing. Four times in Ezekiel 47, the God measures 1,000 cubits, and four times he leads the prophet deeper and deeper. And then he says, "Son of man, have you seen this?" Not have you kind of felt this, not have you understood it as much as it is, have you seen what I am doing? Have you been watching? And what we see is that God does not rush. He's measured. He fills progressively. He's steady. He's deliberate. And that's been the story of Liberty over the years. God moving people in his time, bringing life to and through those who are surrendered to him. Not manufactured, but God revealing what he is doing through us. Two dreams of Gregan, which I shared last week, I just want to summarize very quickly just to get us on the page. She had a dream that we are moving, in essence. One was a train, one was a flight. Both of them carried the sense of urgency about moving. They both kind of pointed to transition. In the first dream, there were beautiful dresses that were treasured and valuable. They were familiar. There were sewing machines that spoke about quality tools. Once were powerful and proven. All good things. But as Gregan sensed in the dream, they were too heavy to carry onto the train. And the realization for us is quite sobering that even good things can slow us down. Even good things can slow us down. And so even fruitful seasons in our lives can become weight if we insist on taking the method into the next move of God, rather than saying, God, do you want us to take this, or are you doing something new? The message is not that your gifts are over, we need to leave them behind. That was not the message. It was just that the old way of carrying them won't fit where God is taking us into. We must travel light. We want to be a church that travels light, not abandoning truth, not discarding the callings that God has on our lives, but releasing attachment to how we've always done things if God is changing it. We don't want to change for the sake of change. We just want to walk in step with God and say, God, our entire lives are at your disposal. Are we good to be in that space? Good. The second dream carried a sense of urgency again, and this time towards a flight. There were delays, people needing oxygen, people under threat, people not packed yet. Some needed healing, some needed protection, some needed encouragement to get ready. And in the middle of it was a calm assurance that we're still on time. We're still on time. Jesus is not frantic. He's patient. He moves at the pace of his grace, is what God does. There is an urgency, but not a panic. Can we separate those things? There's an urgency, but not a panic. Because God has direction. He's guiding us. And the call for us is simple. Align with God. It's walk in step with God. It's not lag behind. It's not run ahead. Let's stay in step with the Spirit. When God moves, we move together with Him. Yes? None of us lagging behind. None of us running ahead. Because there is work to be done. There is work to be done. There are people that you think about week in and week out who don't yet know the life that you have found in Jesus. And there's an urgency in your heart for them to meet this Jesus. There are ministries that God is purposing for people in this room to bring this life-giving water that we saw last week to others. It's not for us just to keep here. The Spirit has gifted each one of you very specifically for the building up of liberty as we need it. He's placed you here for a very specific reason with a very specific gift. To build up His bride. But we run at God's pace. And what does God's pace look like for His followers? We're going to look to Jacob in the Genesis account, and then we're going to look to our hero Jesus to give us our third and our last perspective for 2026. Genesis 33, Jacob, as many of you would know, deceived his father Isaac. He stole the blessing that was meant for his older twin brother Esau. Esau was enraged, and he'd resolved to kill his brother Jacob. His mom let him know about the plot, and so he escaped. Jacob ran and fled to Haran. He married. He had 11 sons. He built massive wealth in livestock and in servants. And then 20 years later, we read this account in Genesis 31:3. The Lord said to Jacob, "Return to the land of your ancestors and to your kindred, and I will be with you." You can imagine the fear he has of his very own brother, whom he stole from, wanting to kill him, and God saying, "I want you to go back." So what would we be feeling, right? There's this, we don't have cell phones, so we can't sort out the relationship over WhatsApp. We're like, I'm getting there, and I don't know, this guy might have swords, he might have an army, I don't know what to expect. But in obedience, Jacob returns home. But as anticipated, he gets the news that Esau's approaching with 400 men. And so he's thinking, here it comes. Lord, you've led me right into my own massacre. Jacob assumes the worst. He divides his camp. He sends wave after wave of gifts ahead of him. Very smart man. He then sends everyone, the rest of his family and everybody ahead of himself, while he remains behind and then famously wrestles with God. He wrestles all night saying, God, I've got to get a blessing from you, otherwise I am destroyed. That's what his wrestle with God was about. Limping away from his encounter, he moves forward at dawn, and then he sees them, Esau and his great, great army. So what does Jacob do? As any person whose life is threatened, he bows down 7 times before him. Esau runs towards him, not with a sword drawn, but with arms wide open. He embraces his brother Jacob, falls on his neck, kisses him. They both weep together, not having seen each other for 20 years. The brother who swore to kill him has forgiven him. There's reconciliation, something that a WhatsApp message could not have achieved. The river of God flowing through Esau's heart, bringing life, bringing restoration, and bringing healing. The relationship that Jacob feared was lost forever, God restored in an instant. Esau then says, "Let us journey on our way, and I will go alongside you." Translation, let's travel together, and I will keep pace with you. We'll travel together at the same pace. But Jacob's response to him is going, you've got 400 men with you. And his response is, but Jacob said to him, my Lord knows that the children are frail and that the flocks and the herds which are nursing are a care to me. If they are overdriven for one day, all the flocks will die. Let my Lord pass on ahead of his servant, and I will lead on slowly, according to the pace of the cattle that are before me, and according to the pace of the children, until I come to my Lord in Seir. What does God's pace look like for his followers? And what is our third perspective? God builds pristine churches at the pace of family. God is building pristine churches at the pace of family. Family is God's timing for liberty. It's understanding that God has placed family, God has placed children in your hands. And we're refusing to sacrifice them for the land, for the ministry, for the inheritance, for the job of the promise that lies ahead. To see what God has given us and not sacrifice it for what we're hoping lies in the future. It's learning contentment and refusing to covet what we don't yet have. It's desiring so much what you don't have that you neglect to or even despise what you currently do have. I'm sure some of us have experienced that. Just there's this promotion coming. There's this big job that's about kids, just I can't. And fast forward 2,000 years. The disciples are managing. About this afterwards. Little children are being brought to him in order that he might lay his hands on them and pray. The disciples spoke sternly to those who brought them. The disciples rebuked them. Jesus is busy with important things. He's preaching. Don't distract him. He's busy doing God's work, kingdom work. But Jesus said, let the little children come to me. Do not stop them. For it is to such as these that the kingdom of heaven belongs. The disciples saw this as an interruption. Jesus saw this as the kingdom. I did prep them ahead of time, as you can tell. I said, I shall need to rebuke you publicly, so brace yourself. The disciples saw logistical problems having children in the hall. But Jesus saw what the Father was doing at the pace of family. The apostles affirm Jesus' teachings when Paul writes to Timothy about an elder's qualification, and he says, he must manage his own household well, keeping his children submissive and respectful in every way. For if someone does not know how to manage his own household, how can he take care of God's church? He then says, I'm writing these instructions to you so that if I am delayed, you may know how one ought to behave in the household of God, which is the church of the living God. The church is a household. It is the household of the living God. Your household is a form of church. They're interlinked. They're not separate realities, separating leadership approaches, one at home, one in the church. The pace that preserves your household is the same pace that preserves the church. The care demanded of you and from you in your household is an echo of the care demanded from you in the church. And the best way to understand what church should look like is to look at a family. Not a business, not a university, not entertainment, family. That's our measure. And God addresses Israel through an old prophet Malachi about the faithlessness in marriage. And he says, you cover the Lord's altars with tears, with weeping and groaning because he no longer regards the offering or accepts it with favor at your hand. And you ask, why does he not? Because the Lord was a witness between you and the wife of your youth, to whom you have been faithless, though she was your companion and your wife by covenant. Did not one God make her? Both flesh and spirit are his. And what does the one God desire? Godly offspring. So look to yourselves and do not let anyone be faithless to the wife of his youth. What does God desire? Godly offspring. That's what God wants. Train them in the right way, the writer of Proverbs says, and when they are old, they will not stray or depart from it. Your primary mission field during the season when you have young children is your children. That's the primary field. Not the church budget, not a building project, and not ministry initiatives. Your children. That doesn't mean that the church stops. It means your mission field, the budget, the building project, the ministries, the church all moves forward, but at the pace of family. Current culture either neglects children or makes children an idol, while simultaneously burning parents out who are trying to keep up with the idol. The result is that kids must be subcontracted out so that we can maintain sanity. This has leaked into the household of God. This has leaked into the church. But Liberty has chosen a different way. Kids in our service. Chaos, yes, but it's what the Lord is doing. Not because the venue is too small, not because we lack volunteers, but we've been intentionally waiting on God, walking at the pace of family. And including family where it matters most, surely the worship of our God together. Surely. Because we believe that kids are on the journey with us. They're with us. And this declares that they're part of it. It's one thing to have it in a manual, but to have it in reality. We believe that parents are responsible for discipling their own children, not outsourcing it. We also believe in cross-family discipleship, which is happening so beautifully in this community. Sunday mornings after the meeting, my children abandon me. I don't know where half of them are. They just go to other families and I see them later in the afternoon. Faith babysitting half this community's children. Phoebe with baby Samuel. It's a beautiful thing. When families hurt, Westerns, we hurt with you. But now we celebrate. Because God has been good. We're aiming to make God the main thing. And bringing our kids along. We're not making kids the main thing and bringing God along. And the fruit we're hoping for, we're trusting for, is as we see, whoever's been on setup and you arrive here and the chairs are already set out and you're like, why did I get here so early? The reason is because the kids have set the chairs up. You can't hold them back. They're leading in the chair packing ministry. Bless them. We get an extra 5 minutes in bed. They call Liberty our church. You know what a win that is? Phoebe memorizing Psalm 127 the other day. What a win. Together in community. Children who know that they belong in God's house because they've always belonged in God's house. Not having to try to teach them that and rescue them in their teens or in their early 20s. Children witnessing, Acts 2, being lived out, devotions modeled at home, practiced here in our gatherings. A pristine church, simple, uncomplicated. And day to day in our homes. Not events driven, healthy family rhythm driven. It's a bit long, not as catchy, but there it is. This is a culture we're seeing God establish at Liberty. Not by accident, definitely not by convenience. Not because cultural pressure demands it or other churches are doing it. Not because it's tidy, but because we believe that God's pace includes children. And we refuse to leave them behind in the race. Last week we heard about the prophetic word of a dam with sluice gates, small gates that control how much water goes out to balance preservation of the dam and nourishment to the river below. And so there's a wisdom of when to open the flow of water and in what direction. Sluice gates aren't permanent. They're seasonally, they're opened and they're closed. Not everything's open all the time. Not everything's closed all the time. There's strategic, intentional building as the Lord directs. And so sluice gates require wisdom about when to close as much as when to open. Because the water of the Spirit is incredibly powerful. If every gate stays constantly open, you flood everything and everything's destroyed. When you have young children, moms, dads, some of those gates need to stay closed for a while. Not forever, but seasonally. So that the water flowing through your household doesn't become a trickle with nothing left to give your children. We can't pour all of our water out to everybody else and have nothing left for our families. But then we also don't shut off everything and cause the riverbed to dry out. We don't go to the other extreme. There's favor from the Lord when we honor everything that He's placed in our hands. But it takes wisdom. It takes discernment. It takes us drawing near to God. So number one, He is raising up pristine churches. We want to keep this as simple as possible. But then He's bringing life through the simple church. But then He's bringing life through the simple church at the pace of family. That's what we're aiming to become as God is doing that. We're not hard driven. We don't want people burnt out. There will be times when there's a lot going on, but that'll be season specific. We're not sacrificing households on the altar of ministry, and we're not sacrificing the household of God on the altar of family. We're not doing either. Can we build both households? Can we build both households at the pace of the livestock and the children? And so this is to understand that the household of God is built by stewarding our own households well. Stewarding our own households well. And that's what we're pursuing. The beauty in the simplicity. Son of man, have you seen this? Have you seen that that's what God is doing in this community? 4 measures, 2 kilometers, God is deliberate. Until He stood on the bank of the uncrossable river, surrounded by life. That's where the life is. When we're walking in step in the depth of God. And His pace includes children. So I want to, as we land, bring 2 groups into focus. Firstly, if you don't have children or your children are grown up, you're not less called. You're not second-tier Christians in the household. God has placed different things in your hands to steward at His pace. And the principle is the same. Honor what He's placed in your hands. Don't despise your assignment because it doesn't look like somebody else's. Your pace is still God's pace. And you have a critical role coming alongside families who are in the thick of it. I remember the Kavarises at one stage, 4 kids under 4 years old. That's wild. But we have a community that comes alongside and relieves and gives breathing space. Cross-family discipleship. Carrying one another, creating space, being spiritual aunts and uncles who declare that these children belong to us too. They belong here. They ought to be here. Having 6 children is wild, I'm not going to lie. It always strikes up the question, people always ask, one of the first. The first is, are you Catholic? That's the first one. And then the second one is, how do you do it? Do you know what my answer is? You are how I do it. You. Without this community, there's no ways we would have had six children. I can promise you that. Would have gone away from my wife for a long time. This is how we do it. This is how we raise families that honor the Lord. Secondly, if you do have young children, your primary mission field in this season is your household. Stop feeling guilty. It's your primary season to have this ministry of yours as your household. It's not less important than preaching. It's not. It's not less valuable than leading a discipleship group. It's a work that God has assigned for you in this season. Embrace it. Embrace it. And the freedom for us is that when you steward your household well at God's pace, you're building His church. You end up doing the very thing you think you're missing out on. You're building His church. When you disciple your children daily, you're fulfilling Acts 2:42. You're setting boundaries, God-given boundaries that preserve your family's faith, and you're producing godly offspring. Teaching them about the word, teaching them about prayer, teaching them about fellowship, teaching them about breaking bread. Don't sacrifice your children on the altar of ministry. And don't drive them so hard that the flock dies. But also don't lag behind. Don't get distracted. Don't wander away from what God is doing in His household, the church. Lead carefully at the pace of the livestock and children in step with the Holy Spirit. That's what we're aiming to do together. Every discipleship group, every ministry, every person, all working together, each at the pace God has assigned in step with the Spirit. For some of us, it's young children. For some of us, it's aging parents. For some of us, it's a business calling or a healing journey that we're on. For some, it's doubling down on training to lead a discipleship group. For some, it's endless hours of learning to play guitar so that you can serve us towards worshiping God with our voices. For others, it's stepping off worship so they can give birth and build their household. Whatever it is, it's the pace that God has for you. And we're going to walk this thing together. If you have children here, can I ask you to please go and get communion for them? And can I ask you to pray together? If you don't have children here, can you please find other children of God, gather with them, and take communion together, please?